My daddy has lots of books, and he likes to read books. And he interviews authors at KAZI. You are now going to listen to KAZI Book Review with Hopeton Hay.
Rudy Reitz's debut novel, The Resurrection of Fulgencio Ramirez, is set in a fictional town on the border of Texas and Mexico, mostly in the 1950s, 1980s, and 2000s. A work of magical realism, its namesake protagonist is a pharmacist still pining for the lost love of his youth, Carolina. It weaves together the past and present, natural and supernatural, as Fulgencia strives to succeed in America, break a mystical family curse, and win back Carolina's love after their doomed youthful romance. Born in Brownsville, Texas, Rudy Reitz won 4 International Latino Book Awards for his short story collection, 7 for the Revolution, and the 2017 Gulf Coast Prize in Fiction. Rudy Reitz, welcome to KZI Book Review.
Well, thank you very much, Hopeton. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Rudy, I'm going to start off by saying that your book reminded me of a book I read maybe 30 years ago that I absolutely loved. Gabriel Garcia Marquez's book, Love in the Time of Cholera. And it reminded me of that book because of the magical realism. It reminded me of that book because of the young love and then the long breakup and getting back together again between Carolina and Fulgencio. So talk to me, were you inspired at all? I know you were inspired by your father's stories, but the love story between the two is, are you influenced at all by Gabriel Garcia Marquez?
Absolutely. You know, and thank you for that comparison. You know, for me, Gabriel Garcia Marquez is like one of the greatest inspirations for me as a writer. You know, when I was in college, I started reading his novels and short stories and just fell in love with the style. I'd always been a reader since an early age, but I had never really read magical realism until I read his work and just fell in love with it. And then that novel in particular, of course, yeah, I love that novel. I found it, you know, very, very, I don't know, very moving. I found it very, very captivating. And I just love that story. Now, when I wrote The Resurrection of Fulgencio Ramirez, I didn't start out thinking like consciously of the influence, but then actually after I finished the book, you know, a few people mentioned that it reminded them of it, and I was like, oh yeah, I could see that. So I think maybe subconsciously it influenced me as well.
Talk a little bit about the 2-decade journey writing this book and the intersection during those 2 decades between inspiration and craft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a long journey for sure. I started working on the novel actually in 1998 when my wife Heather and I brought our daughter home from the hospital. She was our firstborn, and I had always been a writer, had always wanted to write a novel, but had felt like somehow I wasn't ready yet. I didn't feel I had the life experience yet to write a whole novel. And then I remember the day we brought her home from the hospital, we were taking her up the stairs to the bedroom. And as I was walking up the stairs carrying her, I was like, it was just like a lightning strike of inspiration. I thought, oh, I know the story I have to write. And I don't know if it was becoming a parent that suddenly gave me like a different perspective on life. And I realized, oh, I need to write a novel that's inspired by all these amazing stories I grew up hearing my dad, you know, share with me as a kid and a teenager and a young adult. And so I was very inspired, and I wrote that first draft of the novel within the next 2 to 3 months. And then after that, it came close to being published a few times, but you know, for one reason or another, like it would be pretty close, and then it wouldn't go through. So I kept writing other things, you know, kept coming back to it, kept editing, rewriting. And that's where, like you said, the craft comes in. I think as a younger writer, I didn't fully appreciate how much value the editing and reworking and rewriting and rethinking your story and your characters can bring to the novel. So it definitely did happen for me every time that I worked on it. I felt like it came forward as a better story, a better book, a stronger novel. And also, interestingly, since I had drawn inspiration from my father, as the years went on and he changed and he evolved and he, you know, even matured more and I matured more and I had experiences as a parent and as a husband, I think I was able to continue to go back and better understand the character of Fulgencio and better craft him as a more nuanced portrayal of a character.
I was reading a review of your book, and the reviewer said something to the fact that, wow, this is really not that believable, love at first sight. And I don't know about you, but I can recall being in high school, seeing that young lady, and literally thinking I'm falling in love at that time. I mean, I've had that experience in high school, and I've had that experience in college. So when I read that, I said, well, what kind of experience has this reviewer had? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, you know, I certainly have experienced the magic of love at first sight. You know, when I met my wife of 25 years, it was like, wow. I mean, the evening I met her, we fell in love, and we spent the whole evening talking, hours and hours, you know. And I didn't want that evening or that night to like ever come to an end. And ever since that moment, we didn't want to spend the day apart, you know. So it's been an amazing journey. I feel very blessed and fortunate, because I don't think everybody does get to have that experience, you know. But those that do, you know, we're very blessed. We're very lucky. And those that haven't, I mean, there's always that hope, you know, there's always that hope that you're going to meet somebody, you're going to feel that way. But of course, everybody's life experience is different. So for some people, maybe it's a more gradual falling in love process and coming to appreciate the person that they're with.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to KAZI Book Review on KAZI 88.7 FM. I'm Hopeton Hay. My guest is Rudy Ruiz. We're talking about his debut novel, The Resurrection of Fulgencio Ramirez. This book has a lot of contrasts between Fulgencio, poor, living in the border town that has a lot of similarities to Brownsville in the fictional town you created for this novel, and being Mexican-American. He falls for the blonde-haired, white Anglo, rich private school young lady. And was that intentional or was that organic?
Well, a little bit of both, Hopeton. You know, kind of what's interesting is in like the early drafts of the novel, the character of Carolina was a more acculturated Latina whose family was not a recent immigrant, you know, a Hispanic family that was more, I guess at the time the word assimilation was what was used in the 50s, and they were more a part already of like the upper crust social establishment, you know. And then so in the original drafts, the gulf that social class sort of gulf that Fulgencio is trying to overcome and bridge was really within the Hispanic culture itself. It was one of acculturation gap of being a first generation born American son of, you know, low income immigrants, as Fulgencio is trying to attain and manage this relationship with someone who's already kind of achieved the American dream. The more I worked on the novel and the more I refined it and had challenges, you know, getting people in the publishing world to connect with it, I decided that to change Catalina's character to being an Anglo character to further sort of heighten the contrast between the two worlds, Fulgencio's world and Carolina's world, and to reflect a little bit more of the racial and ethnic divide that was also very real at the time and continues to be real in America today between a minority and a non-minority, person in that kind of a relationship.
Now, Fulgencio, actually, his family goes back to the 1600s, a land-grant family, land granted to them by the Spanish king. So The history of the family is one of wealth, but we're talking 350 or so years later. I thought it was interesting that you had a lot of history in this book, and I love history. So when you start talking about the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo in 1848 and the property being half on the northern side of the border and the southern side of the border, you got me there. So talk a bit about the intention of the history, which I just found absolutely fascinating.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Well, you know, again, this is something that evolved and got integrated into the story over the years as I worked on the novel. And again, I have to thank my father, who was always an inspiration related to this novel. You know, a lot of the stories of Fulgencio as a young man were inspired by stories my dad shared with me about growing up in the 50s, being first in his family to go to college. He went to UT Austin, which back then, being from Brownsville and being the son of immigrant parents, that was a big feat. You know, it's still a big feat, I think, to go to UT Austin, but for him, it seemed like a Herculean endeavor at the time. And then later in his life, my dad, one of his interesting, pursuits became studying the family tree and genealogy and learning about all that. And it was not something he'd understood growing up, but he came to understand in his 60s and 70s that he was a descendant of Spanish land grant holders, and that this little ranch that he'd grown up visiting in Mexico, El Dos de Copas, was actually the last little part of this old, very large Spanish land grant that had been in the family since the 1600s, as you mentioned, or 1700s. And that land grant called Caja Pinta was actually spanning the Rio Grande, as you mentioned, and it had land on both sides of the border. So he got really fascinated by that, and it was just like a final gift that he bestowed on the family, that knowledge, before he passed away in 2015. And what fascinated me about that all was that he'd grown up in a time where, in the 50s and 60s, where, you know, Latinos were often made to feel like second-class citizens, and a lot of them in South Texas were growing up kind of impoverished, kind of, you know, discriminated against as well. And little did they know, because they'd lost the thread of history, that a lot of them didn't realize that their ancestors had owned much of that land, had perhaps had wealth, as you mentioned. Although I think in those times, it was still a very rustic kind of wealth. You know, they lived out on ranches and they had cattle and whatnot, but they lived pretty rustic lives. And so that was all news to him when he figured all that out. And it kind of reframed how he saw his life. You know, he'd grown up a little bit with a chip on his shoulder and a lot to prove and trying to reach for the American dream. And then suddenly he came to this feeling like, hey, I should have never felt like a second class citizen. I should have felt like, you know, the descendant of kings and nobility and whatnot. And it was kind of a real interesting development that I tried to integrate into Fulgencio, and I tried to tie it to this magical realism curse that has haunted the men and his family ever since they lost their land and the river, the Rio Grande, became the border between the two countries.
I was very interested in the spirits and the ghosts, and I kept thinking, man, if one could look at the losses of your life and someone could come to you and say, it's really not your fault. There was a curse placed on your male lineage.
I know.
And here's how to break the curse.
Right. I only wish I had that kind of like secret formula.
But I really enjoyed that part of the novel, the curse and Minerva and Soledad. And I thought the way these elements that you've pulled together in this novel, this great mix, I think, of these different elements, that the history, the magical realism, the advice you're getting from the spirits, the bruja, it's just, and then if you throw in the love songs, which by the way, there's a Spotify list for, you throw in the love songs, Wow. That's an incredible mix.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I mean, I really wanted to capture, and this is why I think magical realism to me felt like just such the right way to tell this story. I wanted to, when I first read magical realism in college, I fell in love with it. And I thought, you know, that I connected to it on a very cultural, spiritual level. And I felt like, wow, this is writing and like a way of thinking that I really feel is, it's magical, but it's real, I guess, hence the name. And one reason I felt like that is because growing up, I was very close to family members like my grandparents, my abuelito and my abuelita, you know. And when they passed away, for me, it's almost like, yes, they passed away physically, but I still feel connected to them all these years later. You know, their stories, their teachings, that feeling of safety and comfort that I had when I was in their home and around them, the values that they instilled in me and, you know, that throughout the family. And I often dreamed them and dreamt them, you know, ever over the years after they passed away, I still do dream them. And in those dreams, I feel like I'm visiting with them. And when I wake up, I feel nourished, you know, I feel replenished in a way. And I thought, wow, you know, I want to kind of get that across. And magical realism sort of helps you do that. You know, when I read Gabriel Garcia Marquez, The 100 Years of Solitude, that novel, I remember just, that was the first novel I read in magical realism style. And there was this patriarch of the family who appeared after he had died. After he had died, you thought, oh man, this guy was such a great character, I'm going to miss him so much. And then suddenly he's back in the novel and he's just hanging out with the family, and the family acts like it's no big deal. And I thought, oh my God, I just love that, you know, because when someone that's a really big part of your family passes on, whether they're a family member or a friend, I mean, you never forget them. They're still with you. And at those family gatherings, I mean, you remember them and you celebrate them. And that's kind of what this is like, although brought to life sort of visually and audibly, because those spirits are sort of, you know, you can visualize them as if they're really there.
So when you walked the Rio Grande River, did you imagine spirits haunting the Rio Grande River?
Well, you know, when I was a kid and I spent a lot of time, obviously I grew up in Brownsville. And as you mentioned, I recreated the border town, sister cities on both sides of the river, and as a place called La Frontera in the novel. And when I was a kid, I was very moved whenever I was spending time out on that ranch with my dad. There's a scene in the novel where Fulgencio goes on a cattle drive with some of his friends from the ranch lands, as well as his mentor, who's this this headmaster of the Catholic school, Brother William, in the novel. And they do this cattle drive, and they take the cattle to the Rio Grande. And I actually experienced going on a cattle drive like that when I was a teenager with my dad. And it was just such a memorable experience. And when I was out there with him near the river and on that land, I did feel like it was a very special spiritual feeling, a connection to like nature. And when you're out there, like a lot of us, when we go, maybe nowadays it's not so much being out on a ranch, but maybe you go on a hike, or you go out on the lake, or, you know, you do something like that, and there's a certain stillness out there in nature, a certain quiet, and you just feel connected to something greater than just your physical, you know, being. And that's sort of how I experienced it. And later, as I grew up, I realized that for my father, when he would go out to that land, I think for him, he was still connecting with his ancestors. I mean, he had spent a lot of time as a kid with his grandfather out in that land. So I think he was connecting, you know, and remembering. And to me, that's sort of how I translated it into the magical realism part, and the spirits sort of roaming that land and staying connected to it.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to KAZI Book Review on KAZI 88.7 FM. I'm Hopeton Hay. My guest is Ruta Ruiz. We're talking about his novel, The Resurrection of Fulgencio Ramirez. Okay, so now we know with the virtual background, it's really hard to see the book.
Yeah, let me show you. Let me show you the. I've got.
There
the,
we the go. There we it's go.
I was real happy with the cover because it's just a beautiful, very folkloric kind of Mexican-inspired design. You know, with the heart and the roses and the Mexican, the Spanish acoustic guitar up there, and you know, you see the little horseshoe from the ranch and. The old 50s car there, because big part of the story takes place in the 50s. So I felt like the cover really kind of leads you right into the magical realism of the story.
So how much input as an author did you get on the cover design?
That was a really wonderful experience. I always wondered kind of what that would be like. The publisher is an independent publisher called Blackstone Publishing. And they don't publish as many books per year, but their philosophy, as they shared with me, was that they like to publish fewer books, but then invest more time and energy and more attention to detail into each book. And I really felt that with this book. And the cover, like the cover designer, lady named Katie English, she spent time working with me to get inspiration, you know, like, in terms of me emailing her ideas and sort of imagery from the story that I thought really was important. And then she came back with like numerous, you know, design concepts to get my feedback and see which direction I wanted to go in. So I really had like a great involvement and ability to choose between some different styles. And she just kind of nailed it with that particular design. I felt like she totally got it.
Absolutely. So talk a little bit about the fluidity of the border, because that's one of the things I've noticed about the book, going back and forth between Brownsville and going across the border, or at least La Frontera, and going across the border, switching from Spanish to English, a representative of the real life of living on the border.
Yes, very much. I mean, I grew up in a time where, fortunately, it was a lot easier, and that fluidity was very organic, very natural. You know, between both sides of the border and families and businesses and friends, you know, we're going back and forth across the bridges like daily. From the time that I was about 7 years old to when I was about 12 years old, my family and I actually lived in Matamoros, Mexico, which is where my mom was born. We lived over there to be close to my grandparents, which I mentioned earlier. And during that time, I would actually commute with a little carpool of friends from school. We would commute every morning from Matamoros to Brownsville to go to this little Catholic elementary school. And then at the end of the school day, we'd commute back to Matamoros. And back then, it was like a 10, 15 minute commute to cross the bridge, you know, the security and like the long lines and all the talk of border walls and all those kind of things that didn't exist to that extent that it does now. And it was really fluid. And I wanted to capture that aspect of the border because, you know, right now we've been living in a time for a while where the border is really treated as this sort of wedge issue in the political arena. And there's a lot of talk of it more as a place of division and conflict. And so for me, I wanted to sort of evoke a time when I felt like the border still felt like a place of hope and a place where people came together, you know, people from different cultures and languages came together and actually did good out of that, you know, whether it was through cultural empathy and celebration of each other's cultures, whether it was through commerce and trade, and whether it was just through families, you know, families still being able to be connected despite the fact that they're living in two different countries. And that's gotten really difficult for a lot of people today.
Paloma Angelica, this character, the daughter of Fulgencio and Carolina, obviously inspired by your daughter.
Yes, inspired by my daughter. You know, I mean, like I said, when we brought my daughter, our daughter Paloma, she's actually named Paloma. When we brought her home from the hospital, was when I started writing the book. And while my wife was recovering from a C-section, having had a C-section, and we were, you know, taking care of Paloma and she was recovering, that's when I wrote the first half of the novel in the first 3 weeks. And the novel zigzags through time. It really is in the 50s, it's in the 80s, and it's in the 2000s. And I envisioned at the time, you know, eventually Fulgencio and Catalina having a daughter. And at the time, it just, you know, it made sense to me. Oh, let's name their daughter Paloma, just like our daughter. And funny enough, you know, my daughter was a newborn at the time. And I, in the book, the character Paloma, I envision her growing up and going to Harvard College for her university days. And it actually ended up happening in real life.
Wow.
My daughter's a senior at Harvard right now.
Is she studying architecture?
Close enough. Not quite though, but she is an artist. She's an English major. She's a creative writer, but she's also a kind of minored in film. And so she's a creative person, just like the Paloma Angelica character in the novel. She's definitely a builder of worlds.
I want to close to talk about a concept that was brought about in the novel of communal redemption. Talk a little bit about that, because the role of Paloma and bringing these souls, these characters were kind of going on both sides of the veil. And I'm thinking of the City of God. I'm thinking of all these different spiritual inspirations and the role of Paloma in this. But there was this concept you talked about, or which is mentioned in the book, communal redemption.
Yeah, you know, it's such a deep, complicated topic. And I'm just like so glad you brought it up, because a lot of people, they just sort of see the magical realism part and the love story part, and they kind of stop there, you know, and they don't kind of go to that next level of, I wanted to convey beyond the plot and the storyline, that vision of communal redemption, because I think, you know, anyone who's a student of history understands that there's such a complicated legacy of all sorts of abuses, losses, tragedies, violence, you know, entrenched cyclical poverty, you know, I mean, it goes on and on. The list goes on and on, right? And so whether you're in a community like the Latinx community that has suffered through, you know, some of these events that the novel touches on, where, you know, the Latino people, for example, in the Southwest and Texas, went from, at some point, Spanish was the main language and they were citizens and they were the ones that owned the land. They went to a place of displacement, you know, where the land was taken away, the language was, you know, secondary. And they were often, you know, brutalized or, you know, there were mass killings. There were, all sorts of losses. And it's a recurring theme in American history. You see it in the Native American community. You see it in the Black community. We're living it on an ongoing basis right now with the Black Lives Matter movement and all those issues. So really, to me as a writer, I want to entertain and I want to delight readers and I want to immerse them in different worlds, but I also want to build empathy. I want to build bridges of understanding. I want readers who come from other cultures and other communities, you know, especially the Anglo kind of, you know, part of America, to get a glimpse of these issues, to walk in the shoes of these characters, to feel their pain. You know, and my hope is always that I still have this kind of hope that America will redeem itself, that kind of communal redemption, that eventually people will get there, and that there will be more unity and that there'll be more collaboration and more togetherness and more harmony. And that was really the vision of Paloma at the end of the book. And the other aspect of it's multi-generational, you know, is that nobody can expect these kind of changes to happen in one lifetime, in one generation. So Fulgencio, as a parent, had a role to play. He had a role to play in his life, but he couldn't get all the work done. He could lay the foundation. He could do a lot of things, solve his own personal problems, overcome his personal obstacles, lay the foundation by acquiring these lands that eventually then the next generation was going to build upon and build a new kind of city, a city where people from both sides of the border could come together and live, you know, in peace.
Rudy Ruiz, author of the novel, The Resurrection of Fulgencia Ramirez. I really, really enjoyed this novel. Thank you so much for being a guest on KZR Book Review.
Thank you for having me, Hope, and I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this podcast edition of KAZI Book Review. Be sure to like my Facebook page entitled KAZI Book Review, and my Twitter handle is at KAZI Books, and my Instagram handle is KAZI_book_review. Have a great day.